Blog Talk Radio. go.
Elaine Lister took $60,000. For that, she faces prison. There are bankers, investors, who essentially stole billions, brought this country to near economic collapse. You know how many have gone to jail? Zero. None. All those perpetrators of the mortgage fraud that crippled our economy, caused financial ruin for so many, not one has even been prosecuted. But hey, let's get Elaine Lister. Consider the atrocities committed by the banking industry and the government. First, the deregulation of derivatives, which paved the way for those credit default swaps, leading to the great mortgage Ponzi scheme. Then, after those Wall Street thieves f***ed us all up the ass, can I say that? Those criminally incompetent hacks in Washington spent over $1 trillion in taxpayer money to bail them out, with no quid pro quo. No system put in place to track how the banks were to use that money. There were no requirements that they increase lending to consumers. Instead, they just stuck it in their own pockets, took more big bonuses, and as for the rest of us, right up the ass again. Throw them all in jail. How about the 10 worst offenders? How about one? No, not one. Not one. But hey, let's get Elaine Lister. Goldman Sachs deliberately duped clients, sold them lousy deals that their firm then profited from by betting against. That's criminal fraud. Jail? For anybody? Nope. But let's get Elaine Lister. Miss Mendelson says, watch out. We've got social unrest. Is it any wonder? These lugnuts in Washington nearly shut down the government because they can't pass a budget? Millions of Americans are going belly up? And what the hell do they expect? When a government acts to betray the interest of its constituents, civil disobedience isn't just a right, but a duty. Elaine Lister was making a point that day. She didn't wear a mask. She knew she'd get caught. She was in that bank to make a point. She's not a criminal. She is a hero. The outrageous government conduct defense is pretty simple. It applies when the government conduct is so outrageous that it violates fundamental principles of fairness to prosecute a defendant. If not now, when? Government. Hero.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful. But we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate, only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world, a decent world, that will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
Good morning. You're listening to Thor Radio Network. Thor Radio. Radio Ministry. This is your host and founder, Brother Sharif. Today is June 24th, 2014. First, I want to give all praise and honors to the Creator for allowing me, myself, to be here, for everything that He does in my life, as well as allowing you to be here as well. I want to give thanks to those of you that are listening to Thor Radio today. Thank you for congregating in the interest of community, which is common unity, in the interest of the people, which each and every last one of you are one of. Before I get into the show today, I am going to have a short diatribe on some significant issues and topics that is worthy of your attention. For those of you that are in the chat room, we appreciate your attendance, appreciate you being here. Those of you that were able to log on using your internet connection via internet or your cell phones, you had the opportunity to pay attention to the topic of today's discussion. And that topic is, when will the people wake up? When will the people wake up? You know, when your occupational life consists of dealing with commerce and having interaction with corporations, the legal arena, the legal society, which includes the courts, consumers, you are privy to a lot of systemic issues, mindsets, appearances that are numerous. And in every one of those dealings, you formulate a conclusion in your mind about whatever feelings you may have about what you do, whether it's your job, whether it's where you live, whether it's the state that you're in. We always formulate an opinion and a conclusion and label it as such. From time to time, I expose myself to national media, i.e. television, which I call telling lies visually, programming, which it is affectionately called because it is programming. And Thor has shared with you that these national news outlets are owned by corporations. So in essence, they are able to manipulate certain things, omit certain things, and paint a picture with the actors and actresses, because in case you didn't know, it's what they are. They have directors. Some of them take drama classes, acting, media courses. They learn how to speak. They learn proper etiquette They're trained to portray an image that they want you to accept as your truth. Some of the things as of recent I've been hearing, of course, is a topic that I usually don't pay much attention to. It's a topic that invokes certain anger in people. It invokes a certain amount of disrespect, depending on who it is. Some people take it serious, some people don't. For some, it invokes a superiority complex. For some, they take it as a form of disrespect, which leads to low self-esteem or a lower confidence in yourself. Some of you do. And that topic is slavery. And I bring that up not to deal with the topic as you know it, but let's just put our toe in the water, so to speak. There are many out there who may be of the belief that there was slavery. Many of you, when you think about slavery, maybe a majority of you might reflect to depictions as you see it in movies, 12 Years a Slave, Roots, things of that nature, that depicts overwhelmingly one race or ethnicity of people that were enslaved by force. It's up to you what you want to believe. I really have no beliefs. Everything I would be able to say to you would be based on hearsay because I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I've heard about it. I've watched movies about it. And so have you. And not to undermine those historical events, whether they occurred, and maybe to some extent they did, I have no doubt. To the extent, I don't know personally. And as you go forth in life, you will learn to not rest your hat on things you don't know, hearsay, as opposed to facts. Well, some of you might be able to say with certainty that slavery did occur to a certain ethnicity. I would also submit to you that there are many forms of slavery by many other ethnicities beside what are termed as black people. There was slavery in Spain, France, Europe, Irish slavery. And the victims of that slavery were not black. Although it's not really taught in the public school system, there's always some imbalance on history. Brother Sharif, why do you bring that up? I bring it up because the media always appears to make race an issue. Is it an issue? To some respects, it is. In my world, is it an issue? Absolutely not. Is that, why do you think they continue to make it an issue? Is it to pit one race of people against another? Some races think that this is their country. Some races have evidence they were here before those that think that this is their country. It matters not, really, who's right or who's wrong, because I'm going to tell you with certainty that each and every last one of you are slaves. I don't care if you have a $50,000 a year job or a $250,000 a year job. You are a slave. You are a slave to some corporation. And what do I mean by some corporation? Well, for those of you that don't know, for the most part of your life, you're living inside of a corporation. Many of you refer to that corporation as the U.S. or the USA or the United States, all of which are not countries, but corporations. My point is not about slavery, but it's about what kind of slave really are you? And have your states, your federal government, your politicians sold you into commercial slavery? That's the point. What kind of slave are you? Well, I'm going to demonstrate to you just what kind of slave you are. And I'm going to ask each and every last one of you, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? Some of you walk around and some of you really feel that you have some advantage over a certain population of people. And the people that think that are some people of a certain background or color. But I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the corporations, which of course is the US, USA, United States, and the states at large. Are you really free? Or are you free to be a commercial slave? Are you being used? And what are you going to do about it? You know, anytime that people in history have gotten together collectively and band together, great things has always happened. It was usually applauded when the people came together for a common interest and common purpose. Now, they term them riots or anti-this and anti-that. Why? Because everyone but you know that when the people finally come together, start to read, start to understand, start to band together, start to hold those accountable, great things happen. responsibility happens. The world starts to change as we know it. But what I find is that how better is it getting for you? How better is it getting for you? I've sent all of you that are on the email list over the last month certain articles, some of which demonstrate an appearance of oppression, definitely disrespect, maybe some corruption as well. Specifically, there were some articles sent out on a recent debt collector who was arrested in Florida for bribery, throwing millions of dollars at a bank employee to enable him to obtain some portfolios of some charged off debts in the form of bank fees. Okay? Losses that more than likely the bank had already written off. Or if you check out the news today, maybe some fees that were illegal to charge in the first place. Yet and still, this billionaire debt collector felt it valuable enough to pay an insider $1 million just to have a chance, an opportunity of obtaining those files. Why? Why? Because he feels and knows that the people are not educated. Betting against the people. I sent you articles on, several articles on the fact that it appears the legal society is creating schemes for the consumers, homeowners, finding ways to extrapolate money from them that is not due for services that are not really even services, filing lawsuits that they know that have no merit, charging fees in triplicate that they know have no merit. Taking homeowners' properties, using shoddy and fabricated, tampered and manipulated documents. And these are corporations. But what really happens? The corporation that is responsible for those corporations, the U.S., USA, United States, what do they do for the people? Well, they enter into billion-dollar settlements on your behalf based on your injuries, what was done to you, not to them. And they settle with the banking associations and debt collectors for billions and don't as much as hold a picnic for you. Right? So let's talk about that. We all know that there's, every month you pop up, there's a new settlement with some governmental agency about debt collection. The mortgage debacle. Billions. Justice Department, states, governmental agencies, CFPB. Every month, they're settling, many times without court, for millions, billions of dollars on your, the people, behalf. And you get none of it. And some of the media wants to talk about slavery. Why is there these type of questionable behavior at best? Maybe some bit of corruption. Is it really corruption, or is it that the people are just not awake? They're not reading their contracts. They're not applying the law. They have no knowledge of the law that governs their behavior in commerce, or what governs the debt collectors or the creditors in commerce. So the legal society at large begins to just cut corners, whereby something may take a year to accomplish. They know that you're either relying upon one of them in that society to present or plead your damages that you sustained, or they know you're not going to defend them at all. So they find ways to cut the corner and say, why should we wait a year? Why don't we just cut some corners, fabricate some paperwork, accomplish the same thing in 3 months that would have taken us 12 months to do? Could be some of that. But in sending out that article, and there's several hundred people on Thor's mailing list, I don't know if I received one or two responses. Why is that? Are we numb to what's going on, or are we too busy being economic slaves? I sent an article out, and this is just about what goes on in the arena that you deal with most and what we deal with on this show. It's not to point anyone else out. We also talk about people and consumers and gurus that say and do things that are questionable or sometimes just ridiculous. Everyone knows that I talk about just about anyone if it affects commerce, behavior, and conduct, because that's what we focus on here at Thor. So I sent an article out of a judge that, while on the bench and on camera in court, full of people, the people, assaulted an attorney because he was doing his job and trying to protect his client's constitutionally protected rights. And this assault took place right in the courtroom while he was robed in front of at least three or four county law enforcement agents who apparently didn't move. They didn't interfere. They didn't do anything. And the judge returned to the bench and laughed about it, made light of it, and went back to sentencing, setting bail, standing right before the people. And none of the people said anything. And of course, there was no follow-up of the people. They took care of it internally, and they separated the two, and this same public official was able to probably sentence someone for assault or battery or something of that nature, similar to the outrageous behavior he depicted right there in front of the people. And I sent that email out, just was on the news. No one responded. Are we desensitized to what power we have as people? That if you have no reaction to things like that, but you're always subject to some sort of commercial tort, thing that requires you to pay for something that maybe you didn't know anything about, or any alternative was harmless to begin with, how can you be desensitized to you being an economic slave. There was also articles that went out on debt collector information, some of the consumer protection bureaus informing you that most debt collections are erroneous. Most debt collections don't have, debt collectors don't have the requisite paperwork to support a finding of debt. But you go to the court and the legal society is able to demonstrate a greater knowledge of the law over you, and you lose. And many of you cry about losing because you didn't know how to present your case or you didn't take the time to read the law. And the law was always available for you. Always available for you. So you blame the attorneys and you say they're crooked. Well, there are some occasions where they are. This is not an attorney or judge bashing session. We're all human. Make mistakes. Some of you made mistakes by engaging in commerce without knowing the laws that governs that behavior and conduct, and you're paying. And you're paying dearly. The corporation, the states, are receiving billions of dollars in your name for your injuries, for your stress, for your pain, and you say nothing about it. The people. We all know if the people stop buying, the corporations would have nothing to sell. The people stop borrowing. They wouldn't have enough business lending corporation to corporation. Why? Because there's no consumers, no people. So who's the most powerful element in that structure? Well, the people. So knowing that you're the most powerful piece of this puzzle, why do you take the abuse by debt collectors or any corporation at that? And don't say a word. Who wake up and say no? Only then will things change. I'm sure some of you are familiar with the situation that happened, and I don't know much about it, and I'm just using it for example, trying to demonstrate a point I'm trying to inject. There was a situation in Nevada called the Bundy Ranch situation, and I've heard different stories, but for the most part, it appears that the homeowner of that ranch and property was alleging that some corporation, be it state or government, was encroaching upon his protected right to property. I don't know who's right and who's wrong. Portions of the story I read said that he took his grievance and redressed to the court, and the court ruled for the corporation. I don't know what redress he took to the court, but obviously it was about the fact that he felt his rights were being violated. Subsequently, when he didn't get anywhere as a people in the court, he went to the people. And he gathered the support of quite of many people. And around that time, I believe, from different articles that I've seen, the state enlisted the assistance of their law enforcement community, which they are able to do, and they're very vital in our society. But they were using their police powers to confiscate the man's cattle, I believe, against his objection. And the people formulated by the hundreds, some of them were armed. Now, I don't advocate any violence in anything that we do. I think if we read and learn the law and most of all come together as people, great things can happen. But the people gathered, and some of them gathered for support. Some of them gathered because they were tired of the appearance of oppression by the corporation. Some of them had vendettas from what they perceive as the far-reaching and overreaching arm of the corporation. And the result of that gathering was the corporation and the state backed down for whatever reasons. I'm glad that there was no violence, no bloodshed, nobody got hurt. And I'm glad that decision was made in the interest of the people. Whether right or wrong, when the people come together and they say no, no means no. And the corporation should hear you when you gather and you say no. Because why? What's important? The people. The consumer, right? We're dealing with the fact that the corporations are having more rights than you ever thought of. They're able to lie to you. And in some instances, they're able to cheat you. Much of it is because you're not knowledgeable, and they continue to bet against you being an educated consumer. For instance, it's alleged that I've said it 100 times, Mr. Buffett funded $4 billion to buy, I don't know, $50, $100 billion in defaulted debt. Entities like NationStar, GreenTree, all of them buy what they deem servicing rights, but they're just debt buyers. And they use the word servicing rights, allegedly as what they're buying, to cover up the fact that they're just buying debt, and they're debt collectors. And they use the word servicing when they're just servicing the debt collector. They are non-bank servicers. So when are the people going to wake up and band together and educate themselves on what's going on this debt arena? Because I don't give you black, green, white, or purple. You're a form of debt slave. Period. I can guarantee you. When are you going to get tired of relying upon one particular society or group of people to bring your pain in its true essence and your damages to the forefront? Meaning, when are you going to learn the laws, specifically the consumer protection law, so you're able to write a complaint, so you're able to know the rules of evidence, so you're able to go before the court properly and hold the court accountable for doing what they took an oath to do, is to be amendable to the people, not the corporation, to the people. Why are they so comfortable being amendable to the corporation? Because of money. Because they have no confidence that you as a people will ever get together and say, enough is enough. Why? Because they'll put the Kardashians on TV. They'll put sports out there. They'll put racism out there. And keep you chasing those balls in the woods. Meanwhile, the corporation has gotten so big You just don't do anything. Many of you refer to the corporation as a fiction. Many of you, I don't think, understand that corporations are people. They're persons. I don't think you understand that. Meaning they can sustain injuries as well. Some of you say it's brick and mortar, but no, they're persons. And there's people behind those corporate persons that are enriching themselves off of your ignorance of the law. The only way that we are, as a people, are going to be able to put the country back in its place, consumer-wise, is what I'm talking about. Is when you come together and learn the field and arena you're in, which is being a consumer. In other translations, an economic slave, depending on how you handle commerce. You can be a slave or a master. If you understand the consumer protection laws, you will be a master. And you will have corporations such as debt collectors as your economic slaves. If you do not read and understand the consumer protection laws, you will continue or will be a slave of the debt collection arena. You know, if ExxonMobil, for example, had a corner on the market, what do you mean by that, Brother Shreve? Let's say ExxonMobil was the only gas station in the country that supplied gasoline. What kind of power would they wield? Well, they would be able to manipulate prices. They would be able to control when you got gas, how much you got, what time you got it. If they were the only gig in town, they would control the market on gasoline and control commerce with respect to how you fuel your vehicles, equipment, and on and so forth. We all know that wouldn't happen. The states, the government wouldn't let that happen because that's not fair trade. That's not promoting competition. We all know sometimes you see these airlines want to merge and the FAA gets involved and like, nope, can't do that. If you guys come together and merge, then you'll be the biggest airline in the country, meaning that you would have a considerable amount of market share on the airline industry, meaning you would be able to basically crush your competitors and have a monopoly on the market. We can't have that. Understandably so. The airlines must remain balanced, and any form of commerce must remain balanced so that they don't get too big to where they just feel like they can do what they want to do. To where they feel they can dictate and control everything you do. They work hard through marketing and finding different ways to please you, the consumer, knowing that there's competition out there that may make you go to Shell gas station or Citgo or any one of those other gas stations for either price or service or anything else. Why do I bring that example up? Because we are allowing the debt collectors, represented by one legal society, to control this arena. And we are allowing our states to use us as slaves to enrich themselves, while at the same time you have such a difficult task doing the same. Until you start learning how to read the law, understand the law, execute the law, and demonstrate the law as it relates to the consumer protection arena, you're going to be a slave. All depends what level. It could be a middle-class slave, upper-class slave, or lower-class slave in poverty. But you're going to fit somewhere between one of those three categories. Because you're dependent on one Exxon station, one legal society, who at times appears to do what's in the best interest of themselves, not you. They use their knowledge sometimes to oppress you, just like the corporations do. They lie to you. Sometimes they steal from you. Am I bashing them? No, I'm bashing you. Because they only do it because you allow them to do it. And you don't say anything about it when they do it. But you'll fight each other in a minute. 2,000 years ago, religion or slavery or whatever other little silly topics we focus on. Meanwhile, we're being enslaved. If there's a mention of a war, gas will go up a dollar and you won't say anything about it. There is no war. It's just a mention of a war. And you become an economic slave to Exxon and Mobil and all of those. Some of it you can do nothing about. Some of us have decided that food prices are so high, we're going to grow our own food. Well, that's the way you do it. But then sometimes the government, the corporation says, no, you can't do that, and they try to restrict that. Again, trying to prevent the power of the people to some extent. Who's the competition for the legal society? You. There's only one. You're the competition. You're the additional societies and groups, the people that are going to be able to do your own cases, grow your own food. When the commercial fishing arena gets out of business, gets out of control, what does the people do? Go get your fishing pole and your bait. And fish for your own food. What do you do when the legal society don't want to take your cases, or they decide they don't want to litigate cases like they should, and or they just want to sit back and maybe enrich themselves or buy into the debt collecting agencies that is oppressing you, or going to the court system and lie and twist and cheat and everything else? What are you going to do? You going to continue to rely on them, or are you going to learn yourself how to bring your case? What are you going to do? I see a lot of cases where it's just ridiculous. But y'all don't know how to bring your actions properly. And then hold them accountable. So the one legal society don't have to respect you as a consumer or one of the people. They don't respect your power. And they just run all over you because you're paying attention to idiotic information from so-called gurus. That's part of it. Let's just be real. You're not reading the rules. They're telling you to ignore the rules. You don't know how to talk. You don't know when to talk. You don't know how to write or when to write. So you fail there. So it's not all of their fault. Some of you erroneously use the word corruption or fraud or one of those ambiguous terms because you didn't read or didn't understand. When are you going to start making the legal society respect who you are as the people, as a consumer? Well, one way you're going to do it is start learning how to bring your own damn case. Forming groups on your own and helping each other make the debt collector the economic slave. Somebody that when you have nothing else to do or everything to do, to go after them. That's the only thing that's going to wake the legal society up is when the people start taking things into their own hands, meaning your own commercial issues. Only then will they respect your purchasing power, respect you being the most important commercial figure in this country, because without you, they would absolutely disappear. Yet they treat you like you're the least significant in that chain. I just told you they collect billions, trillions of dollars in settlements for behavior that was levied upon you, that damaged you, that caused you to lose your economic footing. The banks playing with the LIBOR code. The legal society playing around with paperwork. Wall Street creating complex programs marinated in legal jargon to where really the only people that should be engaging in it is the legal society, yet they present it to you with flowers and rainbows, portrait of something that you like, and hiding behind it is several pages of economic slavery. And they've gotten comfortable doing that to the point where is it really corruption or comfortability? So until you start being able to do things yourself, then that society will continue to take your money and not mount a proper defense or offense, settle what's best in their favor and not yours, tell you when they don't want to do a certain thing or another, tell you no, you don't have a case when you should know that you do, tell you how much you should settle for when you should be settling for far more, make backroom deals that doesn't include you. Everybody is getting paid off your injuries. So the state will settle cases against debt collectors and the banking industry for billions based on fraudulent, defective paperwork, behavior, and conduct, right? And they'll put it out there in an article and put it in your face. And some of you will say, oh, wow, goody. They got so-and-so bank or so-and-so servicer. And you applaud that, but you still have a contract with their name on it. And when you go to the court, you have to fight tooth and nail for the same and federal government has already determined to be worthless. Defective. They get to settle sometimes out of court for billions. You have to fight like a dog to get damages or in the minimum
get to the debt voided. Why is that? It's because of you. People don't stand up. You don't do anything about it. How can the paperwork be void or subject to billions of dollars in settlement, but you go to ask for your compensation and you have to fight for years through two or three courts? Anything wrong with that picture to you? What are you going to do about it? Some of you are not going to do anything. When are you going to stand up? Some of you are never going to stand up. How can the act of a debt collector be wrongful in order to enrich a state or a governmental body or agency or some basically corporation, but that same paperwork not be enough to yield you any compensation? And some of you are just paying on it after they've already determined that the corporation that's on your document violated the civil laws to a large extent. So I'm going to make this last example for you, and I'm going to wrap it up. You as a consumer, citizen, whatever you want to call yourself, you go to work every day. For the most part, for every dollar of profit you make, you're subject to anywhere from 20 to 39% tax. Okay, so now you're down to, let's say, 60 cents of profit. Care tax, FICA, state tax, a couple Social Security tax in there. And you might be down to 40 cents you're bringing home. Right? As a consumer, the most powerful person in this country, one of the people who are the powerful, most powerful in this country, you go to work, make a dollar profit, and come home with 40 cents or less. Simple math. Right? So out of an hour of work, you're really only getting paid for about 20 minutes. And you're slave to some other corporation for the remaining of that hour. Who's really the slave? Take a debt collector. A debt collector can invest one silver nickel, because the going rate for buying debt is about 5% or less. It doesn't make a difference whether the face value of that instrument is $200,000 or $200. It's all on a piece of paper that can be, and many times, as many of you know, is dealing with foreclosure, is manipulated and altered and forged and executed by people without the authority to do so, you name it. And a debt collector can take a nickel and absolutely get you to pay $1 plus costs and fees and attorney fees for the legal society on top of that. Out of one nickel, they can almost create $3 in profit between themselves, the corporation, and the legal society that they bring you into to collect on that nickel investment. Now you understand why it's so big. Why, now you understand why you need to wake the hell up. Now you understand why every opportunity you get, you need to be taking your debt collector to task and doing it yourself in order to get the respect of the legal society to start taking judicial notice that if you don't take care of the consumer and the people, we'll do it ourselves. And business may not be as plentiful as it is. Or we'll begin to treat you as you are, since you lay in bed so much with the debt collectors. We're going to treat you, according to law, the same as the debt collectors. Why? Because nothing personal. Is that everybody all the time is betting against the people, the consumer. All the time they're betting against you. Credit default swap insurance in the secondary market. They're betting that the loan that they gave you with all the garbage language in it that was determined to be defective. They're betting that you won't make but a handful of payments on it. So in essence, they're betting on you being a failure and not being educated. How long are you going to be an economic slave? Are they wrong for doing what they're doing? You can say they're wrong. Me? I like what they're doing because I know how to make them the economic slaves. You might not like what I just said, maybe because you won't apply yourself and you don't know how to do that, which is not that difficult. So am I blaming any particular society? Not really. Give me the book that you read and I'll read it and we have equal footing and there's no corruption in the environment that I'm going in, I'll beat you hands down every time. That's me. Let me know what applies to me and what applies to you. I'll find a way to be compensated. So is corruption out there? To a degree, yes. But it's only because the people don't stand up anymore. Not for yourselves, not for each other. You have a picket Wall Street when the banks is basically throwing money at you. And then the attorneys are laughing at you because the contract was always in front of your face. And the law was always available for you to use. Instead, you want to whine about how they put you in debt as opposed to what you can do for the violations of their behavior and conduct. Are you a victim? Some of you may think you are. Have you listened to Thor Radio one or two times? You are no longer. The more people stands up for themselves and do for themselves and stop being a dependent on the corporation, the better things will be. Are you going to continue to be an economic slave and a victim, or are you going to be a victor? Are you going to continue to let someone to invest a nickel get $3 out of your pocket, and you know that the $3 you got out of your pocket, you only brought home really $1? Now you understand why you're an economic slave and why they choose the corporation each and every time, at each and every turn. Because you're not educated in something that you do every day. Whose fault is it? I say it's yours. Because the opportunity is definitely there. They tell you about it. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, there's articles. The National Consumer Law Center, they tell you all the time. The information is out there. Exactly what to do, how to do it. I mean, with specificity. No more excuses. No more distractions. This debt arena is growing. They're investing in it because they're betting against, they're betting that you will never, ever become a real consumer. An educated one. That's what they're betting on. It's getting a little bit better. People are waking up. I agree. Not enough, though. Some of you are still making a mindset change into what you've been for the longest, and that's a consumer. What takes you so long to make that shift? Look at your paycheck. You tell me what you are. Look at the debt collectors. Investment. One nickel will get them $2 to $3 or more of your money that is taxed in some way, and that every dollar you make, you only bring home about 25, 30 cents. You do the math and you tell me whether you ever be able to get your family out of one particular economic class to another. Those numbers. Whether you ever be able to work enough hours on a job so once you get that 25, 30 cents out of that dollar, you're going to be taxed everywhere you spend it. Taxing to poverty in the debt collection society is putting you in the poorhouse. And there's so much money that you can make by their mere existence. That's all I have for you today. With regards to that, hopefully I left something in your mind to think about reality of what's going on. Should be a happy day for you when you keep in your mind that that debt collector, that foreclosure, allegedly, that debt collection activity, they just got a nickel in it. And you're going to let them put you out your house for a nickel. You're going to let them put you out your house when they settled for billions of dollars for you based on the same transaction. And you want to stand on the show and talk about you're scared. You're fearful. For somebody to take a few nickels and take your hard-earned dollars that are taxed to mere nickels. Corporation is doing it. And laughing at you that you really don't know what to do about it. And some of you still want to play the mortgagee mortgager game. when Thor has told you from the beginning, not much of a financial injury there. Next time you come face to face with the debt collector, give him a nickel. And say, that nickel right there is going to cost you some dollars. And then in many cases, that money you get from that debt collector, that settlement, depending on your tax status, may not be taxable. Please consult your accountant or tax attorney for further information. So when you can get a dollar from a debt collector that is not able to be taxed the 30 or 40, 50, 60 cents that you would in your job, at your job, you do the math. You mad about how much money you make? Open up the mailbox. You mad about being taxed into poverty? Open up your credit report. You mad about them betting against you? Open up the FDCPA and the FCRA and the TCPA and your state consumer protection laws. But if you're not mad, continue to be a slave. They'll reduce you from rich to middle class, from middle class to poor, from wealthy to rich. Some are go from wealthy to poor. But right now, there's millionaires being made that own debt collector businesses, and they're getting paid off of your ignorance of the law. And if you just took the time to learn the law, you would be a lot richer than you are and a lot richer than them. We're going to take a small break. Hopefully I penetrated some of your minds and your conscience. Sometimes I just have to share those things too, based on things I see, information I may come across, certain emails I may get from listeners. Thor tries to keep you on track, try to keep your mindset correct. We're not talking about issues here that are illegal, or we're not talking about violence or overthrow or anything like that. We're talking about commerce here. When the people come together and share commerce, share the laws that governs us, things will change. That legal society will change lanes in a minute. Because if the people are winning and the debt collectors are losing, they're going to start earning your business again. They're going to start coming to work with suits instead of khakis. They're going to stop investing in the debt collectors and start investing in you again, or taking your cases and litigating them to the hilt. But it's not until by demonstrating your knowledge that this will ever happen. We're going to take a 1-minute break. We'll get back, bring my panel in. We'll get into the show. If you have a question, 657-383-0332. We'll see you in 1 minute. All right, we're back. Welcome to Thor Radio Network. I'm going to bring in my panel. I'm going to go over some recent articles. We'll get into our show, take your questions, hear some comments from my panel. Before I do that, let me just breeze over some articles that may be worthy of your attention. In the debt collection arena, there's a recent lawsuit. It says that the banks owe as much as $500 million for false FHA claims. Revelation by a consumer who happens to be an attorney, Lynn Zimoniak. She was a whistleblower from the state of Florida who dug into the issues of securitization, and she received quite a handsome reward of about $18 or $20 million from alerting the government, and who knows if they knew or not, of the fraud that was going on. And there's an article of unendorsed notes used by Bank of New York Mellon in foreclosure and bankruptcy cases. Many of you see these notes if you're dealing with a debt collection action that you may deem a foreclosure. I urge all of you to look up the legal definition of foreclosure. And then while you're doing that, immediately when you finish, go to your commercial law Bible, the book of the FDCPA. Okay. We call that here at Thor your commercial Bible. Turn to the book of the FDCPA, chapter 15, 1692, verse A5, for those of you that like church. And there you see the definition of a debt collector. And in verse A5, you see the definition of a debt. Make a determination as to whether that debt was acquired while it was in default. And the only book you have to use from that point on is going to be this book, the FDCPA. So, seeing as the Bank of New York was playing with endorsements, and we'll have to do a show on endorsements and UCC, what a blank endorsement is, what a special endorsement is, and how the Uniform Commercial Code treats those. We'll probably do that this week or next week so that you understand. But 80% is what they say of the cases Bank of New York use unendorsed notes. Many of you will see in your foreclosure actions that they'll give you a copy of a note. And I'll say this to you. Most of you that executed notes and deeds or mortgages, they were notarized. Almost. But if you inspect the evidence that's presented you, or when you sent out a notice of dispute, or if you send out a QWR, take notice of the note. Don't come to any legal conclusion that that's the note you signed, because I'm going to be honest with you, in most cases, it is not. Write the terminology down of authenticated. In some instances, a notarized document recorded in a county can be determined to be authenticated for purposes of evidence. In looking over many foreclosure cases, I don't know how y'all don't pick up that somehow the notary stamp disappeared and were replaced with undated endorsements. No date, no stamp, not notarized, not attested to. And you will find many times they will say the legal society is litigating these cases for the homeowners, They will always say the homeowner executed a note and mortgage or doesn't deny that they executed a note and mortgage. Okay? Now, again, most of the debt collection society benefits from your ignorance, lack of knowledge, or lack of education. It is impossible for any of you, whether you had an attorney or not, to look at a copy of something presented to you and not deny that that's the actual note and mortgage that you allegedly executed. How did you make that legal conclusion by a mere copy of something? How would your attorney be able to come to that legal conclusion without admissible evidence or it being authenticated? And still, if it was authenticated, meaning it contained some sort of notary stamp, that was the note that you signed. This society, this debt collection society, is making billions of dollars. And let me tell you how they're doing it. Don't forget the nickel theory. Okay? But let's say they can raise the ante by putting a nickel into every dollar of the debt, the face value of the debt. And then let's add on a 10-cent piece of paper. Right? A 10-cent piece of paper they sling around by fax, by email, filing, the attorney carries it, you carry it, and that piece of paper is supposed to represent your $300,000 or $400,000 in real property with stamps that are undated, unsigned, no notary stamp, cut and pasted. That is what they're using to take your property or take your money. Or if you got a debt collector and you ask for a validation, they send you a spreadsheet with some numbers on it that adds up to a gazillion dollars. Now you're here. Here's a validation of the debt. And you sit there with the guilt and say, well, you know, yeah, I did get some kind of debt. That's what you're doing in the mortgagee mortgagor game. The judge may ask you, did you not get a loan, Mr. Sharif? You don't deny that you got a loan, did you? Sir, I have no admissible evidence before me to determine that I received any loan. Sir, you and I both know that information written on these contracts are not what they appear to be. I believe your state settled for $25 billion for this same paperwork. It's funny how you don't recognize it when I'm presenting it, but inside of that Oval Office that you made those backroom deals and you settled with the same banking industry, I'm telling you I have an issue with the same paperwork. You seem to be asking me a few more questions than you might have asked them. I don't know what occurred in that transaction. And I'm not going to admit to anything until there's admissible evidence before me to my satisfactory that I will be able to answer that question in the affirmative. Until then, let's reserve such questions until that occurs. That's what you do in debt collection. Or you can simply say factually, sir, it doesn't matter whether I got a loan or not. If you're smart now, if you're dealing with the consumer protection laws, it doesn't matter whether I got a loan or not, sir. This case is about the behavior and conduct of the debt collector. I'm not confused at all, sir. I do know all they have is a nickel in it. But I don't have to prove that anymore because I changed lanes. See, I was down there over in that other court playing that game, and I realized that that game is probably rigged to no end. But over here, I can avail myself of those questions because it's not about if I got the debt. it's about their behavior and conduct and actions trying to collect the debt. And once I get into discovery, only then will I determine maybe if there's even a debt at all. And if there is a debt, then we'll have to determine whether it's owed to them. And that's when the fun begins. Let me give you another article right quick, and then I'll bring my panel in. Let's see what else is important. You know, just SEC investigating Carrington mortgage deal with New Century and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and state attorneys file an order requiring SunTrust to provide $540 million in relief to homeowners for servicing wrongs. Department of Justice, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they're going after the debt collectors. And they're making them, in this instance, give you some relief, $540 million. Is that a lot of money? For who? They can pay that $540 million quite easily because, as I told you, they only paid a nickel for the debt. So they're still making 60-70% profit on it. All right. I can go forever. Let me bring in my panel. Layla, Lori, and Rudy. And I'll digress somewhat and let them share with you any comments or concerns they may have about my diatribe. And then we'll go to the call line and answer some of your questions and get out of here briefly. Just want to say thank you to the chat, Lynn Benson. We love you too here at Thor. And Zaya5417, we love you back. We're always hoping the information reaches you in some portion of your mind. Thank you again. I am to Marilyn and everybody else in the chat. We just try to bring you the truth as we see it in various ways that may prick your conscience differently than others. So Layla, Lori, and Rudy, now that my sermon is over, you want to get the offering basket and take up an offering? Because, I mean, we need some donations. I'm just kidding. Go around the church and pass the basket around.
Greetings and good morning. Good afternoon.
Good morning.
Wherever you are.
Layla, you can go first.
All right. Well,
I got a lot of background noise. Who is that? Is that you?
That is not me. I promise you.
Okay. So I'm going to mute the other two out and see where that noise is coming from. So go ahead, Layla.
All right. Greetings, everyone. Brother Sharif, that was an incredible, powerful, inspiring diatribe that you just provided. And, you know, We've been blessed, you know, Rudy, Lori, and myself have been blessed to be associated with Thor and be able to have you at our disposal, so to speak. And, you know, we speak among ourselves, and it was really interesting because we just, without you being associated in our conversation, we were talking about this very thing ourselves. And in preparation for this particular call, you know, I had some things that I wanted to talk about that are in line as well. But before I move forward, I realize that just for everyone out there, I have to do this source disclosure that this information is not to be considered legal advice. There are no attorneys, bar members, or private legal groups associated with the show. So please be informed to research thoroughly all of the information on the show prior to taking any action. Okay, got that out. You mentioned, I mean, you talked about slavery, you know, slavery by force, you know, by virtue of what, you know, people think of slavery. And, you know, slavery is definitely mental. And when we talk about being a master or a slave, I would think that all of us that are on this, you know, call or broadcast and listening to this, that we definitely want to become masters of the consumer protection law. It's very interesting because what's happening around the country, I have something pulled up that I wanted to share with everyone. It says, contrary to many contrary to what many people believe, there are debtors' prisons throughout the United States where people are imprisoned because they are too poor to pay fines and fees. The United States Supreme Court held that courts cannot imprison a person for failure to pay a criminal fine unless the failure to pay was willful. However, this constitutional edict is often ignored. Courts impose substantial fines as punishment for petty crimes as well as more serious ones. Besides the fines, the courts are assessing more and more fees to help meet the cost of the ever-increasing size of the criminal justice system. Fees such as ankle bracelets for monitoring, anger management classes, drug tests, crime victims funds, crime laboratories, court clerks, legal representation, various retirement funds, private probation companies that do nothing more than collect a check every month. People cannot afford the total amount assessed, may be allowed to pay a monthly installment. Many jurisdictions that for these payments are accompanied by fees to a private probation company that collects them. Okay, so it goes on to say that, you know, more and more of these fees, there are more fees for these jails or prisons, these high costs for telephone calls. Inmate share fees are charged for medical services, and the new trend is room and board fees in prisons and jails. Okay, guys, I mean, seriously, if we don't really learn consumer protection laws, you know, for those of you who are out there that plug into this television that, you know, is so aptly described as telling a lie visually or this programming, you know, that potentially might be where people are. And if we don't arm up and educate ourselves and actually take action, we're going to be a lost people. You know, we're going to be very, very lost. I have a quote here that I wanted to share. It says, to be courageous requires no exceptional qualifications, no magical formula. It's an opportunity that sooner or later is presented to all of us, and each person must look for that courage in his own or her own soul. That was a quote by John F. Kennedy, by the way. We see what happened to him, unfortunately, but we all have to be armed with action. Lastly, before I pass the torch on to one of my esteemed SOAR members, just wanted to just take notice of the fact that, you know, he who gave us a soul armed us with resolution. Beware of irresolution. It is the intent of thy actions. Beware of instability in execution. So shalt thou, so shall we triumph over two great fallings of our nature. Establish unto ourselves principle of action and see that we act ever accordingly to them. Fear is just nothing but a manipulation. We've talked about this. It's a power of manipulation. If we allow fear to grip us, we will forever be lost. You know, Thor brings this message of empowerment using the FBCPA. That is our Bible for Thor. Arm it, and take action with it. You know, if any of you who know my story know, I've only been here for a little over 2 months, you know, and I'm embracing it, and I am basically attacking it because this is a part of our way. This is a way that we can not just make $100 here and $50 there for the state laws, depending on where you are. It's about standing for ourselves, standing up against the atrocities that are being committed against humanity. And it's not only happening here, it's happening all around the world. One of the suggestions, if you don't mind me just making a suggestion, let's just start with the drinking water. Maybe change some of the drinking water. We know that they're putting fluoride in the drinking water. The fluoride in the drinking water is used as a chemical to control, mind control. And if we're not standing up and we don't feel the empathy to stand up when we hear things that are going on, if we're becoming desensitized by some of the things, and you feel like, well, why am I not able to do anything? Just maybe start small. Start with your drinking water and do away with the fluoride, and maybe you might see a change for yourself. I definitely can see a change in myself since I made those changes years and years and years ago, but it's just something I thought I would bring forward because that is one of the ways, besides the television, they're coming at us at all angles. Just be aware of that, family. They're bringing everything against the people. They want to keep us dumbed down. And if we are dumbed down, we won't stand up and take cause for ourselves and our families, then we're basically decimated. With that, I'd like to say, I'm just going to say that what we do today, right now, will have an accumulated effect on all of our tomorrow. With that being said, back to you, Brother Sharif.
Thank you. Those were some great points, and I just want to say that, you know, the economic oppression is very important, which is why Thor is focused on that avenue of commerce. All the other avenues, I want to say, I know that I make certain comments toward things that are, some of which, to me, make no sense. Now I know what that was. Doesn't make any sense, but, you know, when you get into the, and I want to give all props to the pioneers and researchers who looks into every corner of commerce, including the commercial driving arena. Now, I know I make comments that everybody should have a license or have some sort of an instrument that demonstrates their ability to operate a motor vehicle, automobile, conveyance, car, whatever you want to call it. And you should be responsible and using that equipment because that equipment can hurt someone. If you have a habit of driving while intoxicated, then you need to be governed by some law to keep that conduct intact. But I also know that there's many folks out there that do a good job with respect to the driving license industry because I listened to a mayor a couple of months ago in a state, and I forget which state that was, say, we need another $20 million this year, so I'm hiring more police officers so we can write more tickets. I did believe that he said it, but I couldn't believe he was that obvious about it. But just like I'm telling you, they're that confident in saying that because you believe that you're in commerce. And to many respects, you're not. So when people are being oppressed by overzealous corporations or states trying to extrapolate more money from an already depleted people, then you're damn right people are going to start reading the law and realizing that, well, I'm not in a motor vehicle. Well, I'm not in commerce. Well, I realize that that doesn't apply to me. I have no problem with that. If it's oppressing you, read about it. If it doesn't apply to you, okay, and you can release yourself or remove that economic shackle from you, that's fine, but still make sure that you're conducting yourself honorably in that behavior. That's all I'm saying. But kudos for those that research anything that would put the people into economic strain. And trust me, they write tickets for no reason. They're victimless infractions. You didn't hurt anybody. And there's an opportunity for them to make money on what could have, would have, should have, happened. And who deserves to get paid on that? Just wanted to bring that up as well. Let me open up the line for Lori. Lori, welcome to Thor.
Hola. Good morning. I love
what's going
your diatribe, as you called it. It was right on point, and as Layla mentioned, it's exactly what we had spoken about yesterday and today. I had sent out an article. Well, first, before I even say that, it reminds me of a couple of things that were brought, you know, to my consciousness, if you will. While growing up in the country, as all of you can very clearly tell, I am a country girl. We loved to fish in the summertime. So we'd go out to our stock ponds and sit and, you know, fish and watch our horses and all that. And in the downtime of it, we would practice skipping rock across the pond. And it always fascinated me that if you could find one smooth rock and you could across one pond of water, it was fascinating to me as to all the touches and ripples and rings that circulated through just that one smooth rock, and which I correlate into, you know, just affecting everyone in their conscious minds and their awareness, because it all does have a ripple effect within each other, you know, like the 100th monkey effect. I don't know if any of y'all know about that, but it is a fantastic premise that's brought forward. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But anyway, yeah, one of the articles that I had sent over to you guys earlier, I don't know if you had a chance to look at it or not, is it was exactly on what you were talking about. You know, those of you, I don't know if anyone has ever seen the movie They Live. It's a cult classic by Joe Dante. And, you know, it's on the premise of consume, conform, and obey. And that's what I feel America, if you will, is basically utilized for. That is our major resource. It is what circulates the funding for the corporations, for the industrial complex, it goes on forever and ever and ever. It's an endless amount of resources for those who are able to tap into it and those who aren't able to see exactly what's going on. I know whenever I started becoming more aware of what was going on, I started seeing it just a little here and a little there, and I thought, wow. And, of course, now, you know, years later, there's not one thing that I can look at, not one billboard, not one car, not one toll booth, as y'all know, that's my pet peeve, not one commercial, not one movie, not one news story that's broadcasted that is not perpetuating that mentality of consume, conform, obey. And so definitely more advantageous for us to take the 100th monkey approach, if you will, where you you learn your skill, you learn your craft, and I'm very into, I've got to know what I know. I don't just want to learn it. I want to know what I know. And that knowledge then affects those around you. It rubs off, if you will, and then it becomes, you know, the awareness is abundant and it's all around you. And if more communities would form together, it's just like the one smooth rock going across the pond. All those circles then join together, and there's not one drop of water that isn't affected. So with that, and you talking, I have another thought. Whenever you were talking about that video about the judge, you know, we were having fun with it that night whenever we were talking about it, right? We were laughing and cutting up because, I mean, it is, you know, topically, yes, it cracked me up.
It was funny.
It was hysterical.
Absolutely.
It was hysterical. And we were having fun with it on that premise. But I'll say this. When I think it was Rudy I was speaking with, and I told her, I said, you know, I didn't want to say anything because we were in such good spirits and we were having fun, and I didn't want to be the Eeyore, you know, and go wah, wah, but let me point this out. I said the thing that was most abundantly clear in that video, it reminded me of people who watch a rape or a mugging or a child being accosted in public, you know, or just all the things that people just walk by and don't even – you know, stop and say anything. I said, because it disturbed me that there were probably at least a minimum of like 20 people sitting over there, right? And
absolutely.
Then they're asking the judge, do you want a glass of water? You know, how are you? Can I come wash your head? And all that. And
yeah.
that, it shook me to my core. It disturbed me. And
yeah.
it reminded me of all, you know, of all that. And I remember telling my boys when they were growing up, you know, if they were being endangered by something, you know, by either a mugging or something like that, you know, to reach out in another form or fashion to where it's not going to, you know, make the other people around you that you're trying to seek help from to where they're now in fear and in danger for their lives, to which perpetuates them away from you. It propels them away from wanting to help you because they're, you know, they're just always accosted in fear in their minds, you know. So that's how they automatically respond. And there's just usually one person in the crowd that has the kahunas, if you will, that'll stand up and say, no, stop it. I do not consent. Quit. Get away from that. I'll beat your ass, whatever. Get off that kid. You know, leave the lady alone, whatever it is. And that
right.
will stand up
and
in
that's,
the crowd.
And that's my point about this whole matter. It wasn't so much about the conduct of what y'all term a judge, because, listen, by now you should know you shouldn't fear anybody. These people do,
right.
in some respects, more stupid behavior than many other people. You find it surprised that he jump off the bench and beat somebody up and then turn around and come in, and none of the people said, hey, I think he needs to be relieved of his duty, at least today, and then permanently. Or I don't want him adjudicating my case when he's just as abusive when he's adjudicating over an abuse case. This guy is crazy. It's that my point was, what are we fearful about, and why do the people sit there and act numb to something that if the shoe was on the other foot, you're subject to being taken downtown to a court if your right wheel touched the yellow line and subject to pay some money. But you'll see
yeah.
a judicial official beat the crap out of somebody and four police officers watch it and don't say anything. But let's forget them. Your power is that above them. You're the people. If two or three people would have stood up and said, you need to leave.
Yeah,
we can't have that behavior.
Here?
You need to go. What just happened? What are you guys standing around looking at? You know, it's the same as we're watching people getting mugged on the street. We don't want to say anything because we're numb, or we see dead bodies in the street because they put shootings on TV all the time. Are we numb when we see people getting shot on TV? Are we numb to war, to where when we're going in wars that we're not supposed to go into, are we just numb to say, okay, well, it's just another war. You know, somebody's going to die. It's okay. That's my point about it. It's not a point to necessarily think that any particular society or politician or people does not do things that is crazy. We got a mayor up there that was smoking crack. He's running around there laughing. He's still in office. You know, I'm bringing up these things, you know, to say that, you know, like, when do y'all really wake up as a people sit up there and say they're trying to figure out how they're going to get him out of office, and he's got videos with Pookie smoking crack. And the people is not saying anything. It's the corporation trying to figure out, well, how are we going to get him out of here? And they don't even ask the people who has the power to take anybody out of office. So that was my point about that. But we appreciate your points. I'm going to get on to Rudy and try to get to some of these questions. Thank you, Lori.
You're welcome.
All right. Where are you, Rudy? Is that you?
Hello and happy day to each and every
Great.
One of you. Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. I want to add a little bit something to that. Our word for today is 40, 40, which will fit into what Brother Sharif has mentioned to you today. Recently, I shared the word vision with you, and I talked a little bit about Congress, and that was the FDCPA laws being written in 1977, almost 40 years ago. And I said they were written for such a time as this. Truer words were never spoken. And I personally said that it had been about 40 years since the Congress passed the law, when it was indeed 37 years ago. But I rounded it off to 40 years on purpose, for a purpose. I wanted to plant a seed that would flourish. For the number 40 has significant meanings to me, and I wanted to send you a sublineal message. The number 40 in some circles means a period of testing, simply to see what you're made of, your stamina and your strength. I remember reading someplace how the rain fell for 40 days and 40 nights during a great flood, how people sometimes fast for 40 days and 40 nights for special occasions. Some people recognize a great lawgiver who lived 40 years in the palace, 40 years in the desert, and led a people out of bondage for 40 years. 40 years represents the time it takes for a new generation to arrive. A people's intellect attains maturity in 40 years, where you put all foolish and childish things aside and you get down to serious business. There are lots of organizations and groups to promote and celebrate 40, 40 being the number of great accomplishments. And I could go on about 40, but for the sake of time, I'm going to simply stop here. And I said all of that to say this. The FDCPA has been tested and tried for almost 40 years and has been found to be sound, solid, and true. In other words, it has stood the test of time of a generation. There are many cases to prove that there has been financial success using the laws that were written. Here at Thor Radio, we take the time to bring you updates as to how effective the FDCPA laws are and the success of those who use it properly, who have become educated in the law. Take copious notes whenever these calls are here, because we share with you updates and we inform you and empower you about the consumer protection laws. This is an educational platform. Correct your vision and see what has been laid out for you. Taste, for it is good. It is fortified with understanding, wisdom, and applied knowledge. Get educated. Be part of the 40-40 Club, a generation of educated people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mother Ruth. I love those comments and those words of wisdom. Rudy is almost 70 years old, and Rudy has been exposed to a lot of battles, and they weren't about the consumer protection law, so she's coming into a new dimension in life and understanding it, and, you know, at 70 years old, and even at my age, sometimes I have difficulties changing lanes and gears or just having any mental capacity left to fit one more thing in, but she's definitely creating space in her mind to wrap her mind around this, and she's understanding it, and she's researching it, and she's doing well. I'm going to go to one more comment by one of the students, Brother Maynard. Let's see if he has any comments about the show so far, and then we're going to go right to the line with your questions. Maynard. Brother Maynard. All right, he must be on hold. All right, let's go to the call line, see if we can take a few questions, and then we're going to get out of here. All right, let's go to You on Thor Radio, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I am a new caller.
Okay.
To your earlier comment on, I've got something great for you today.
Okay.
Some emails earlier and felt a little chastised there when we were talking to our audience about none of us would write back to you. But in fact, I did write to you. So I.
Can you speak up a little bit? It's hard to hear you.
That should be better.
Yes, that is.
I was going to say that you were discussing your email, and I've got a positive news for you. I emailed you this last week and got and did not get a reply. You might want to look and see if your email's working. The question I have, being a new caller, is I have a couple of matters important to me, and where would I discuss that? Would that be a private matter in the email I ask someone to contact me, or is that done on the call? Relinquish.
Well, if you deem it a private matter, then yeah, I would definitely say you may want to email us. But if you have a generic or a general question that's short and sweet, we can address it here. But since you deemed it private, I guess you should just email us. What email address did you use?
I don't recall. I've got 20 email addresses. I'll have to go back and look that up again.
Okay. Well, our email address is debtshow, debtshow, at yahoo.com.
Okay, now, I'll send another.
Yes. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to 470-412-1568.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. A little bit noisy, but we can hear you.
Hold on. Okay, is that better?
That's a little bit better. Yes, sir. How are you?
Good. Always a pleasure to hear from you. Always good to get a question in. I got two questions. One would be with dealing with the, I guess it would be Financial Accounting Standards Board. I don't know if it's 95 or it might be where it speaks about when the promissory note is converted into a stock certificate. Are you familiar with that?
I'm familiar with it, but what does that have to do with debt collection?
Okay, well, I'll ask you a debt collection question, because I'm here in Pennsylvania, and document consumer protection laws, the statutory damage is just $100, but just in 2 years. So how do you increase that if there's no punitive damages? There's only actual damage. I mean, what exactly would one's actual damage be? Mental stress? I mean, because it's saying that the statutory damage is, you know, $100.
Right. So statutory damage, if they're found liable under that, is going to be $100. But then you have actual damages. What are actual damages? What if you paid $10,000 to a debt collector and you wasn't supposed to? Or what if you had emotional distress or any other actual damage? Then that would subject them to those damages. And
okay.
If you didn't feel adequate there, then you would go to the district court. Or if you wanted to get a little bit deeper, you would get into your credit report and maybe see if there's some violations there that would subject them to punitive damages as well as actual damages.
Okay. Well, that was basically...
But the Financial Accounting Board is not something that you would use at all, and that's one of those rabbit trails that... maybe an attorney would use that's getting paid $500 an hour to plead, but you wouldn't get anything from that. You wouldn't need it.
Okay. Like I said, I consider you the expert, so like I said, that's why I asked the question. But I appreciate it.
No problem.
Always a pleasure again.
Yes, you too, sir. Appreciate it.
All right.
Let's go to... 770-5892. You're on Thor Radio. Do you have a question?
Hello?
77. Yes, sir.
Hello? Yeah, I got a question about set off. Me and my wife are disabled, and I've been fighting the banks now for 3 years, and they just did a set off without going through the proper channels that they're supposed to go through. Under,
explain to me what set off means, if you would define that.
Yeah, they sent over, USDA sent over a thing for 31 USC, 3716, requiring them to reduce my Social Security benefits. But they have to go through 4 steps, and they didn't do any of the 4 steps. And then I sent them a notice of... validate the debt within the 30 days, and they just started with taking out my Social Security disability check. I was wondering what to do, basically.
So who is they, first of all?
USDA.
USDA.
Yeah, we got a loan. Me and my wife are disabled. We got a loan through USDA.
Okay.
And we had to stop paying. It was a 1% loan at 80%, and then the other was a 5% loan from another bank. Through inflation, we had to stop paying the bank over, the 5%. And they set off, they sent us a letter that we're going to set off this and start with taking your money. But I disputed the debt, but I think they broke the Fair Debt Credit Protection Act.
Okay. Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Now, was that loan at all assigned to anyone else from the originating party?
No.
Like you say, you got the loan from the USDA. Was it transferred to anyone else who's trying to collect the debt now from you?
No. It was from they stopped doing it, and USDA said they bought the debt back from the other bank.
Which other bank?
And
what was the name of the other bank?
State Home Mortgage.
Okay, so State Home Mortgage is the originator, your creditor that did the initial loan, correct?
USDA was the originator, and then they, like I said, they did the 1% because me and my wife are disabled, and then they, under their rules, that 20% goes out to another bank. And we stopped paying the State Home Mortgage one, and matter of fact, we did an EFT with it about 2 years ago and got back the original.
What is an EFT?
EFT instrument to discharge the debt.
Oh, wow. How did that work out for you?
Well, we got back the original note. We got back the original cancellation of the debt. We got back the security debt deed saying it's all paid.
Slow up a little bit for me so I can get a full understanding.
Okay.
So you use an EFT process, and I've heard of those, and I've spoken about them, and you're saying that you sent that to the bank, and they sent you back the original note. How do you know that to be the original note?
Because they said it in their letter. We are sending you the original note, the original canceled deed, and the original security deed. They said it right there in their letter. But then 5 months later or 6 months later, USDA sent a thing saying that they had bought up our loan.
So you did an EFT. They sent you the original instrument back, and they said that the instrument was canceled. Now, who was this that responded to the EFT saying that it was canceled?
State Home Mortgage.
State Home Mortgage. And they said that it's canceled. You have no further obligation under the debt, correct?
That is correct. And it's canceled down at the recorder, down at the county recorder.
So they did a cancellation of the debt and filed it and recorded it themselves in the county recorder?
Yes.
Okay. And how much was that debt for, if you don't mind me asking?
$49,000.
And they canceled the debt and sent that into the county, and that's on the county. And then you said subsequently the USDA came in and started demanding the same $49,000.
Exactly.
So what went wrong? I mean, did you show them the cancellation that State Bank?
Yes.
And what did they say?
They haven't said anything. They just send me, just like you say, they sent me these spreadsheet. You know, all of a sudden the spreadsheet on August 13th of 2013, in the fee payment due, there's a $46,699 debt. I mean, an entry in there under the fee payment due column.
Well, that's interesting, sir. I've never heard of a front-to-back dissertation of this EFT process. I've heard many other things other than it being successful. But, you know, when you send it out and you said they recorded a cancellation of the debt and they returned to you the original note and you feel that is what it is, I don't see how the USDA can come in and then ask you for that same debt. So that's going to take a little bit further pursuit on your part. I really don't know what to tell you in terms of an EFT or when you mention the word discharge set off.
How about the fair debt? I think they violated the fair debt and credit protection.
If they're debt collectors, then they did. If they obtained the loan while it was in default, then they are debt collectors by operation of the law. But I would say that if they obtained the loan when it was canceled, as you say, by the previous original lender, the bank, then definitely it would be being a debt, and a debt that's already been, as you term, discharged or set off or canceled. So, yes, that would be a violation, being that if what you say is true and it was canceled by the previous party, it should be canceled for everyone.
That's what I was thinking. But they're still coming after me, you know?
And that usually happens when I hear about these particular processes. You know, I hear that, you know, they do this and they do that, and then most of the time, 9 times out of 10, I hear that, you know, the debt reinvents itself and gets reciprocated, you know, to another party, and they come after you as if nothing ever happened. So I really don't know.
Well,
you can email us at debtshow@yahoo.com, and maybe we'll look into it further with you.
Oh, well, that'd be wonderful. That'd be wonderful. Thanks you very much, and you do a great show.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. All right, let's go to 678-5744. You're on Thor Radio. Do you have a question?
Thank you. As always, you're wonderful. I've only been on 3 calls, but the information is mind-blowing. Some things that I wanted to ask you that I didn't get a chance to ask last week was, when I purchased a home July 3rd of 2003, it was with Countrywide. I heard you say something today about Bank of New York of Mellon. That was on my paperwork as well as MERS. Transferred over to Bank of America. Now it's with North Star. Now it is in foreclosure. It is. It was a debt that is in default, so I know that they are practicing something wrong, but it was something I wanted to know that I was totally unclear of. Do I need to do a securitization audit on my home because I am in Georgia? And 2, why is my mortgage not showing on my credit report? It didn't show when it was on the Bank of America, and it's not showing now.
Okay. Most of the time when Bank of New York Mellon is involved, they were heavily involved in secondary market securitization, okay? So should you need some form of information from securitization, yes, that would be helpful. Maybe the assignments in itself would put you within the frame of the FDCPA and your consumer protection laws, definitely, if there was an assignment. That information from some sort of securitization audit may help you determine that there is another alleged party involved. North Star, you know, if you say some transfers, multiple transfers went on, they would definitely be a debt collector. As far as your mortgage not being reported on your credit report, that may be a good thing. Why is it not being reported? I don't know. There's so many debts out there that they don't get a chance to report all of those to the credit, or they're circulated so frequently that we just never get around to it. And there's a cost involved with reporting, so... You know, debt collectors, although they buy the debts for a nickel, they want to preserve most of their profits. So, you know, they feel that reporting on your credit, a foreclosure, they feel they'll have more success in the court if you don't know that they're a debt collector as opposed to you thinking that they're a mortgagee. So that can be some of the reasons why they don't report. It's not a bad thing. All right?
Okay.
But I definitely recommend you get some securitization information or... Maybe on one of those assignments, there usually be some indication that, you know, it was sold into the secondary market, and you should go based on that.
Well, I went ahead and did pay for your consultant as we were doing this call because I need to know, and I downloaded my Bible like you told me to last week. So my whole thing is I want to know the process of what I need to do so I can go after them because that's just how I feel. When you talked to the other gentleman about, he said, you know, whatever it was that was $100, you know, suffering and pain and this and that. When I tell you this has been a stressful last 6 years, actually, mm-hmm. It's been stressful. You don't know if you're going to lose your house or not. You don't know
That's
who
right.
you're paying or not. I mean, from losing a baby to having two abdominal surgeries because of stress because of this situation. So I really want to fight this, and I paid for your consultant, and I also emailed you, so I'm just waiting for a response.
All right. We'll get into it, and then we'll get to you, you know, as soon as after the show and set up some time for us to go over some information with you. But we definitely understand the stress, and that's the type of stress that entitles you to significant damages by a jury, because we, you know, we know that this stuff is confusing to the average, and even people with extensive knowledge becomes confused because there's no rhyme or reason to a lot of this nonsense that goes on. You just need to sue them, and you need to not even try to figure out why they did what they did and how they did what they did. They don't know how and what they did. So definitely we'll talk to you after the show. We appreciate the questions. All right. All right, let's go to 301-9186. You're on Thor Radio.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. I recently had filed an action for Fair Credit Reporting Act in New York Southern District, and I guess I was more so looking for understanding. So I filed the action. They responded with a 12B6 motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim on which relief can be granted. But here's the thing. According to the presiding judge's local rules, it says that before you can dismiss the case, you have to have a pretrial conference
to discuss
the motion. So
I
noticed that they hired attorneys from Texas, so they probably didn't really know the local rules. So I sent a letter to the judge basically saying that they failed to follow the local rules, so how could they dismiss my case when they don't even follow the procedure themselves? We got to the pretrial conference, and I chose to amend my complaint because obviously there was deficiencies in my complaint that I didn't have in my initial complaint. So my question was, though, because I know the federal rule of civil procedure basically says that they technically in another court they could have, you know, got the case dismissed. Follow the judge's local rules, is there any grounds for a summary judgment or no?
No, that has nothing to do with those are procedural defenses.
Okay.
You just say you oppose the motion due to the fact that the local rules does not afford them a dismissal based on the way they try to do it.
Okay.
So basically, you know, in New York, yeah, you have a pretrial. You know, Brother Maynard, everybody in New York goes through that, where they'll file a 12B6, and you can request a conference on it or a pretrial hearing, and, you know, the judge will have all members there and say, you know, why shouldn't you be dismissed? And they're going to argue, well, judge, you know, it should be dismissed because of this and because of that. And I believe it gives you an opportunity to maybe amend or correct some defects in your pleading before it goes to hearing. Okay, so if you had that hearing, then you would advance the same argument. Well, judge, you know, the local rules. Okay, so you got you went on ahead and you had the pre motion hearing.
So then what
did the judge say based on that? Mm-hmm.
Well, he was cool. He said, "Oh, if you're going to amend the complaint, then go ahead. How much time do you need since you're pro se?" He gave me 30 days to amend the complaint. So that's what I'm going to do.
Okay, why do you feel you need to amend? What was the reason why?
Because I did TCPA, FDCPA, and FCRA, and I went ahead and purchased the National Consumer Law Center book. They got like a big book. I was reading I was reading over that, and I'm like, wow, well, there's a lot of stuff that I failed to allege that I needed to allege. And they pointed out several deficiencies in my complaint as well, too. So they pretty much just gave me a template for what I need to allege.
That's what I tell everybody many times when you file complaints. You know, don't be afraid. Don't try to make it perfect because the defendant is going to tell you what's wrong with the complaint when you file it.
Pretty much, yeah.
You understand?
Much,
so you'll have a time to you have a chance to amend it. They're going to tell you everything that's wrong. And you'll be like, okay, excuse me, let me go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. Let me change some things, and you bring it back out. So you kind of use them to point out the defects in the complaint that you might not have known about. You correct it, you come back, and you're like, okay, here we go, Judge. Now that's better. Let's roll, okay? So that is what happened. So that was a good job.
And then one more quick question. Another case I filed, too, it was it was against Capital One. Now, they played it a little bit differently. The attorney filed an answer, and we haven't had this pretrial conference yet, but he's, like, and I was looking at the case management order. He's been kind of rushing things. Like, he's asking me for, like, a 26-day disclosure statement when the judge hasn't issued an order yet. So I was wondering, like, trying to get his play on things.
They do that sometime. I mean, your disclosure, as an individual, you're not going to have a disclosure. What he's talking about is case management. Your 26A, he's probably getting ahead of himself. Now, did he file an answer?
They did file an answer.
I mean, you have to do your case management. You have to do your 26 conference. So you're the plaintiff. You need to initiate those things. The plaintiff is supposed to do that. Now, a lot of times you'll get an attorney. If they got a law firm, they'll come and do your proposed, you know, order and case management schedule. Sometimes they'll do it, but it is your obligation, your responsibility to do it. You have to do that. And he's right in asking for that if there's an answer filed. You need to get into that case management because the judge is going to want that. They need to file their disclosures. Okay.
But the reason why I was curious is because it said, like, it said, and I don't have it right in front of me, but it said the judge has to issue an order before you do the 26-page disclosure. We haven't had the conference yet.
Yeah. The judge, you know, sometimes they will issue an order saying you need to do, but you should know, being a learned litigant, that, you know, after there's an answer and the court allows you to proceed with your case, yeah, you just do it. I mean, they shouldn't have to tell you. You need to know. You need to roll off. So if the attorney is giving you a hint, don't be so skeptical of the attorneys that they're doing something wrong to you within the litigatory game. You know, you can follow the rules. You know, they're not going to trick you and all that. I mean, you know, they're not telling you, you know, something that's wrong. Don't be that way. You know, they're usually trying to help you along. Look, they get paid throughout those processes. Every motion that they file, they get paid. So they're trying to say, listen, I'm trying to build this client. When you going to do this 26F conference? Let's go. So, yeah, just, you know your rules ahead of time. Know what you're going to be faced. You're going to get 12B6 or the way Rudy say D6. And then after that, you need to have opposition ready. Or they may just fool you and just come in and be like, well, we're just going to file an answer. And after the answer, you're going to do your 26F. You're going to do your proposed case management. Then you're going to go on and you're going to have a hearing maybe, you know, on the case management about your discovery and progress throughout discovery. And the court is going to issue a scheduling order. And then you're going to get into your discovery. So you should already know where you're going.
I pretty much have all my evidence. I filed a complaint with the Consumer Financial Protection Board, which shows what they did to conduct an investigation. They didn't really do anything. So I mean, I got some good evidence. And last question, they always reference Ashcroft versus Fishball and saying that, you know, I'm using formulaic recitation of the causal elements. And but my thing is, like, all right, if I allege a fact and I have exhibits to support that, how is that not sufficient to meet the pleading standard? I guess is what I'm trying to understand.
Right. Let me make you understand this, and you'll understand everything. You have to be confident in your ability, and you have to not follow everything an attorney or a defendant says. If you try to research every case that they throw at you, if you listen to the case with Brother Amin, I mean, he gets motions with 10 case laws in it. It don't matter. They're making you nervous. You got to know that you stated a claim. You stated within the four corners of the complaint your claim. The judge denied the motion to dismiss. He's allowed you to progress and move forward to discovery, and you need to not worry about what they say. You need to focus on what you say. They have to have something to say. And a lot of times they're just throwing things at you to make you think there's something wrong. They're always going to point out some case or say something. That case is just used. It's form pleading. It's just common. You know, they fill it in and they file it. And so don't get dismayed by what they say or feel like you're doing something wrong. You know, you pay attention to what the courts say. All right?
Okay. Okay. All right.
All right. You're doing a good job, man. Keep going. All right, brother.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right. All right. Let's go to 202-2218. You're on Thor Radio.
Hello, how you doing?
Doing well.
Hello?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Two questions. One is, what do you recommend resources, like just beginning to learn about this, the FDCPA and how to write pleadings, too? You mentioned a while back about some booklets that show you how to do that.
Well, the NCLC book, you can go to the NCLC, the National Consumer Law, NCLC, the National Consumer Law Center. All right, they have a variety of books. You also have O'Connor's, Federal Rules, Civil Trials, Forms. You have all the forms that you may need from a case. O'Connor's, O-C-O-N-N-E-R-S, yes.
Civil Rules?
Yes, sir. Civil Trials.
Where do you buy that? Amazon or something? Where do you buy that?
You can go to Amazon for both of those. You can go to the NCLC website and buy those books there.
Okay. Second question is, I know you're big on the FDCPA approach to fighting foreclosure. What do you think about quiet title in fighting foreclosure as well, trying to get the title quieted, that approach?
Hmm. Let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Can a debt collector have title to real property?
No.
You believe that?
As far as I know, have title to real property?
Mm-hmm.
Can they own property? Can they own property?
That's not what I said. Can a debt collector have title to your real property?
I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Well,
I
you read the
yes.
FDCPA. All right. You got to know. You read the FDCPA in its entirety. Read 1692I specifically. And then look at your documents and tell me that if you have certain assignments like MERS and things of that nature, whether really any legal title was ever conferred to the debt collector properly or even at all. So,
yeah, well, my case,
to answer your question, my answer to the question is no, quiet title is not something that you're going to be too successful in, all right, for one or two reasons. That's a mortgagee, mortgagor avenue that you're pursuing. And if you're dealing with a mortgagee or a creditor, then you absolutely have an obligation to them that's set forth in that contract, memorialized by that agreement. So if you play the mortgagee, mortgagor game, then that's a game that has contractual agreements and obligations. And if they violated that, you would be going towards a breach of some sort of that contract or any other law, civil or expert, and all those other laws that apply to a creditor. But if you have a debt collector, then it's no need to quiet title because they don't have title, 1092A5. Mm-hmm. And if they have a debt, then their lane and their Bible is the FDCPA in order for them to try to collect on that debt. And if they're trying to take an action towards real property, 1692I applies to them as well. So you can read that, and I think that will answer your quiet title question.
1692I.
Read the whole thing now. It's not that long. And I think once you read through it and you get to the last page around 1692I, I think you'll have the answer to your question on what path will probably be more successful for you.
So I guess just, again, stay in the lane of the FDCPA and not the mortgagor lane.
If your case determines that, if you're able to look at your case and see that it falls under a corporation or a debt collector that obtained the alleged debt while it was in default, then you have a debt collector. It can't be both.
Right,
one or the other. Two laws can't apply to the same function. It's either they're a debt collector or a creditor.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Let's go to 216-6486. You're on Thor Radio. 216-6486. All right, 201-8387. You on Thor Radio?
Hello. Hello, can you hear me?
We can.
Hi there. How you doing, Brother Shreve? This is Kevin. How are you? I've emailed you before. I bought some webinars. How you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Great. I have a quick question for you. I just got a. I'm just facing a foreclosure. It's not where I live. It's not a primary residence. It's an investment property. Green Tree Financing. Original lender was Countrywide. Sold to BOA or was acquired. You know, we all know they never got any notes. So I did what I hear on the show, and I sent a validation letter, debt validation letter to Green Tree, and they send me back a copy of the original note, which they got from the public records, and they asked me what I would like to see in validation. That's exactly what they said. They didn't even, like, send me anything else. So my question to you is, I just don't know what the next step is. Like, how can I stop them and or sue them? Because they obviously don't have anything. But they're in the New York State Court, which is, you know, and they've put the lawsuit in there. So I have to answer it.
Mm-hmm.
What would you recommend in this as a first step?
Sure. Well, you definitely have to defend any action that they're bringing, and you have to do whatever procedural motions and affirmative defenses based on the fact that they lack standing capacity, they're not creditors, they're debt collectors. Yes, you can definitely plead that and plead a motion to dismiss before you do anything. And
okay. You're
definitely more than likely going to be exposed to the winding stairs of that venue, meaning that they're going to test every speck of your knowledge and your pleading abilities. But at the same time, what you need to do is start your own action against them in the district court under the FDCPA. Now, I say this to people all the time. I know everyone wants to stop a wrongful collection action, deemed foreclosure. I mean, we understand that. But at the end of the day, you have to begin to put in your mind what is going to be more important, you gaining enough damages in the district court for violations of the consumer protection laws collectively, or
yes. You
being concerned about stopping an action on your house. Now, both of them may be important, but what I'm going to say is that if you put all your energy into your damages that you're going to experience, you're experiencing now by operation of them filing that complaint and
yes. Building
up the damages as you go along that process, which would be mirrored in your district court case, then I would say in my experience, that in itself would stop the collection.
Okay. And actually,
okay.
In this particular case, being in a small investment condo, I would actually rather have damages than the condo itself. I'd rather have both.
You need to have that mindset anyway. You want the money, or you want to stop the taking of the property. You might have an opportunity. You have two opportunities. One opportunity is not going to make you any money. It's going to be all defense.
Right.
And if you bring the right claims and you file correctly, then you might have a chance of getting a dismissal, or you might have to ride up the legal chain and get to the appellate court and above to get your remedy. But meanwhile, you set the stage and you filed your complaint based on the wrongful collection and the debt collection of those particular entities, and let's see who gets there first. In New York, foreclosure from front to back is going to take you about 3 years or more. Okay?
Your
consumer protection law action won't, in many instances, take that long, probably half that time at best.
Oh, okay.
And the good
news also is, brother, is that I've rented this property out for the last few years. They haven't come after me until just now. So I've already got I've already put a bank together, hiring an attorney, but the attorney doesn't have the knowledge on the consumer protection laws like you do. So if you don't mind, I'd like to do a consultation in about 7 days. I just have to be out of town, but when I come back, is that okay with you? And I'll go over it with it more detail.
Well, you're not really able to allow when you have counsel. You're not able to talk to anyone else when you have counsel. That is your attorney and that is your counsel, and you can't consult or interfere with that. So if you hire an attorney, you just sit down and you listen to the show enough, you sit down and you tell him what you want him to do. You might have him do both. Okay, he might need to defend the foreclosure and also do the FDCPA where he's able to get the fees from the debt collector. So it's pretty profitable for him to be able to, I guess he's going to get some change from you to do the foreclosure, and then he's able to get some change from the debt collector on the consumer protection side. But you have that opportunity there. And you need to look at statute of limitations. You also need to look at that and see if, you know, it's past the statute of limitations and all those things, the assignments and who they're from and all of that different stuff. New York has a lot of, you know, a lot of cases that are in favor of homeowners. But for the most part, you know, they're going to test your knowledge. It's a system that they're going to almost make you go through the system even if you don't belong there, so to speak.
Right, that's what it seems like. My attorney actually told me that, you know, as best as could be, New York is probably one of the best states in the nation, he says. But, you know, because it does take so long and they give you a lot of opportunities to fight. So that's what I'll do. But the last thing I wanted to tell you was, and you just kind of went over it, was on the consumer protection laws, FDCPA, I really didn't want to use the same attorney only because he doesn't really do that. So that's why I kind of wanted to consult with you, and I was going to do it with myself. Would that be okay? Only on the consumer.
I mean, you can do what you want to do. You can do what you want to do, but, you know, it's best that, you know, I tell everyone, although I talk about every society, be it gurus, be it the legal society, whoever it is, the consumers, I talk about everybody because I've had experience with all of them. You know, I say that if you find a good attorney, and there's plenty of good ones out there, don't get me wrong.
Yes.
I never talk against, and you find a good one, there's many good ones in New York. Just find ones, but I'll share with you an experience I had a year ago that really made me say the things that I said today. I called for a family member that was going through a foreclosure with my knowledge of the consumer protection laws. It was a big law firm in New York, one of the biggest, and they did consumer protection laws. And I called them and said, you know, I have a aunt that has a foreclosure going on, and it was a mangled one. I mean, it was just horrible. So I said, you know, considering you taking a case, I've seen a lot of cases that you've done, and, I mean, they've gotten some pretty substantive settlements. And I never forget what he told me. And his words was, yeah, we don't really do consumer protection cases on foreclosures. That's exactly what he said. And I listened and I said, what? You know, me knowing what I know, he says, yeah, we kind of don't do that in conjunction with foreclosure. And I said, wow. And that really opened up my eyes to say, well, who says that what they say goes? Who says that one society can determine if they get together and say, well, we're not going to file any of these cases on foreclosures because we just want the foreclosures to go through, you know?
Right.
And it blew my mind. But it's then when I started, you know, really on the thing of empowering the people for them to be able to do for themselves and not have any particular society, not even Thor. You should be able to go somewhere else and get some knowledge if Thor is not providing it for you. So, yeah, I would say that, you know, definitely educate yourself. Do what you want to do, I mean, in terms of that. But, you know, it may have changed. That was one law firm. I didn't call that one when I was so disgusted over what he said. But, you know, there may be some out there that that will do it. You know, but, again,
yeah,
knowledge that you have is more
firm.
Important.
Oh, thank you. I was looking for a specialized firm, you know. I'm sorry, sir?
There's a few out there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I have a lot of TCPA, too. I won't get into that now. But, I was trying to find one attorney that could handle that, but it looks like it might have to go to a couple, you know, for the different
shop around. Just Google, look. You know, listen, what I tell you about the Legal Society is that they blow where the wind is blowing. If the wind is blowing with the banks, then you're going to see them having the foreclosure mills. If the wind starts blowing with the consumer protection laws, then they're going to take that hat off and put the other one on and smile at the homeowner and say, come on over, let me go get some money on this end for you.
That's actually a good point.
The availability they have. I mean, that's how it is. It's nothing wrong with that. I mean, around Valentine's Day, you know, you can get a jar of roses for $20. Valentine's Day, they're $60. But you follow what I mean? That's just the way it is. So we can't argue about that. As long as they're making you some money, then, you know, that's just the availability they have. So, yeah, definitely. So I would look into both and see if he will find you a consumer protection attorney. If he doesn't do it himself, he should know. I mean, I don't care how small he is. You know, this information is not difficult. They have a society at their hand, so they can call friends or brothers or buddies and have recommendations or paralegals that may know how to do it, and that's it. It's not much for him to do. You know, you're not going to be, having verbal battles with this. It's going to be, are you a debt collector or not, and did you violate or not? So pretty simple for him to do. A lot easier than screwing around with the foreclosure, I can tell you that.
Hey, Brother Sharif, would you mind if I ask one more question? I took a lot of your time, but I just got a thought in my head here. It's a little bit off the subject of what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. If a servicer is reporting on your credit report,
mm-hmm.
like this GreenTree, and they really aren't the right party, is that an actionable thing under the, FCRA? I believe it is.
Do you owe them money?
No.
There you go.
So technically, there's a case there, or could be.
Yeah, I mean, who, first of all, I'm going to challenge you on one word. Who said they're a servicer? What kind of servicer?
Oh,
a chicken servicer, a fish servicer, or a lawn care servicer, or have you ever, we can't take any definition for granted. What kind of servicer are you? Are you saying, I just read you an article that says these non-bank servicers, they're a non-bank servicer of what type? You service for what? Who? Are you just trying to emulate maybe some transactional words you've seen in the mortgage deed or something like that and trying to confuse me? You wouldn't be trying to confuse me, are you? But if you never ask, is it their job to tell you? I mean, this is what we got to understand. I mean, if we never ask, then... they don't have to tell us.
that makes sense. I didn't mean to call them service. That's just what they call themselves, but I know they're a debt collector, right?
That's right.
I think that opens a huge can of worms for everybody out there, because probably every single person has an alleged servicer that shouldn't be on their credit report if they're in foreclosure.
Well, one of the areas I tell people to look is 1692J. And it's the furnishing of deceptive documents, okay? And what it reads is that, and I'm going to give you one of the easiest ways that you can find you a cause of action in the FDCPA, the 1692J. It is unlawful to design, pile, or furnish any form, knowing that such form would be used to create the false belief. Okay, you can't get any more ambiguous. Than belief.
Right.
The false belief in a consumer that a person other than the creditor of such consumer is participating in the collection or in the attempt to collect a debt. Such consumer allegedly owes such creditor when in fact such person is not so participating. So is not the use of servicer not intended to confuse you and give you the belief that you're dealing with a creditor and that that servicer is a bank servicer, not a non-bank servicer?
Absolutely.
See how easy that was?
That's very easy.
And that's word for word out of FDCPA. I mean, that's no Sharif butter on it. That's no Sharif seasoning. That's word for word, verbatim, out of the act. And that's all you need to say. Well, sir, you use the word servicer, and it implied to me that you were a bank servicer, not that you purchased the debt, as these servicers so-called are doing. And you're on my credit report, okay, which is a legal arena of fair credit reporting. You're not a creditor. I don't know if you're working for a creditor, but you're not a creditor of mine, so how can you report a debt is owed to you? So, you're giving me the belief that you're a creditor by residing in my credit report.
That's excellent. That's excellent. I'm going to pursue that, that's for sure. All right, Brother Sharif, I took up a little bit too much
brother.
Of your time. I happen to, but
I
thank you so much.
It.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
All
bye
right.
now.
All right. That's all of our callers. I'm going to bring in my panel. We're going to close up. We're going to see Brother Maynard. Maynard, are you there? Maynard. All right, he's not there. I'm going to open up the lines, bring in. Wait a minute, let me get to my Yama right quick. Yama, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing
all
good.
Be well
sorry
with
to get
you.
To
I know.
You so late.
That was a great program. It was really great.
Thank
and you.
You
know what, see, Sharif? You are not a selfish person. I mean, people are giving you opportunities saying, let me a private call, and you're telling them, listen, just go to, you know, go to the what we call the scriptures or the Bible.
Yes.
The information is there. You're a very kind person. And see, Sheree, people are awakening, and the reason why they have to hear it maybe one, two, three, four, five times, and then they're acting. They're acting upon all the information, all the truth that you're giving. And they're very appreciative of what you're doing. Because people don't do this. People are looking for gain. They're looking for their selfishness, and they want everything for themselves. And you give it without – you give it – if I can use this – you give it freely. You give it with no expectation of reward back to you. But the Creator rewards you.
Uh-huh.
That's where you get your reward from, because your spirit is true. You give truth out, and that's why people are hearing, and then they are responding. Yes, yes,
that's
I enjoyed
true.
It very much. A great program.
Thank you, Mother. Thank
yeah.
you, Mother. Thank
mm-hmm.
you. Peace and blessings. Love the Mother, definitely. Always depositing words of truth and energy into myself, which I need. And into Thor, the network, and the ministry. We got a minute and a half left in the live stream. We're not going to go too far over. We're just going to close out with comments. 657-383-0332, you can call in. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, we've answered all the questions on the board. I'm going to go to my panel and get closing arguments. Closing arguments. Here I go. Closing comments. Rudy, Layla, and Laura. Laura,
in
you can
closing,
go first. Give me your closing.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Rudy. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. In closing, I want everybody to remember to refocus your vision, get a new lease on life. I hope after today that you are no longer lost in the wilderness, that you are sound and solid, that you will learn the consumer laws. Please get informed. The road is already paved for you. Please have a great day, and thanks for being with us once again.
Thank you.
Hey, beautiful, beautiful. I would like to contribute in my closing argument that young lady who was calling in earlier and was wondering, well, what are the steps that we can take? I love those questions. How can I do this? Step one. Learn the FVCPA, TCPA, and the FCRA. All you have to do is Google them, print them out, and start learning.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Lori.
Blasting me.
It's increased by itself.
And then, secondly, you want to look up in your local state or your state local laws, how they mirror and reflect each one of those. And I noticed in the chat room earlier there was someone from New Jersey that was saying looked in New Jersey and didn't see much, or there was a comment along those lines. If you'll just look, you can type in your state, whether it's New Jersey, South Carolina, North Carolina, Wisconsin, whatever state it is you're in, just type in your Google search bar and like Texas or New Jersey, debt collection laws, New Jersey credit reporting laws, New Jersey telephone consumer protection laws, and those will lead you straight to it. Thirdly, the next thing you need to do is do your federal rules of civil procedure, and then fourthly, your local county rules of civil procedure. That should get you started on your path of not just learning but knowing what you're doing. And then I love the guy who's thinking outside the box that called and was asking all the intriguing questions. I dig it. One other thought I'd love to add to that, whenever it piqued his interest in thinking, wasn't that an FCRA violation? I would pose the question that, you know, he was saying it was his servicer reporting on there. A lot of the times whenever you try and do debt validation on these cats, they'll send back a million different answers, but one of the answers sometimes that they send back to you is that they're an investor, right? And I would pose the question, can an investor report on your credit report? I think not. Everybody have a great evening. Love y'all.
Thank you. Love you too. Layla.
Greetings, everyone. This has been a wonderful, wonderful show. Glad that everyone came out to learn and grow for yourselves. I just want to leave you with the fact that indecision is the seedling of fear. Indecision crystallizes into doubt, and the two blend to become fear. So the blending of this process is very, very slow. This is one reason why these enemies are so dangerous. They germinate and grow without their presence being observed. So don't be deceived by the habits of these subtle enemies. Sometimes they remain hidden within the subconscious mind where they're difficult to locate and still more difficult to eliminate. So just whatever you do, take action, 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 just blast out and take action. That's all I've got to say to be able to plow through any kind of trepidation you may have. I know that this is newfound information for a lot of people. Welcome to the new people that came out on the call today. We welcome you. You're thirsty for knowledge, so we know that you'll hunger and do great things with it. But for those of you who have been sitting on the fence for a while, it's time for you to be bold and get off the fence and do something for yourself. Remember to join in to Thor by sending an email to debtshow@yahoo.com. That's debtshow@yahoo.com. So you'll be in the know. And we will see you here the next time. And be ready and armed with more powerful questions that will help you move forward. Love you all. Peace, many, many blessings.
Thank you. Love you too, Layla. For everyone, for our listeners, those of you that will listen to the show and archive, we want to thank you. Keep in your mind, the only person that deserves to make a dollar out of a nickel are the people that's built this great country, the people that inhabit this great country, people that keep this country going around and around, the people that are the consumers of this country, and no corporation deserves more power, more reward than that of the people. Understand your power, flex your power when necessary in a non-combative, non-violent way. Just a gathering of the people brings fear about these corporations. Just an understanding and education of the knowledge brings fear to the corporations. We are in a corporation most of our day. And we're seeing evidence of the corporations betting against the people all the time. How long will you not understand or not realize that when you put your hand in your pocket, there's 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 other hands in there? When you get your check at the end of the week, how many hands are in your check? Now read the law, understand the law, and then pull those hands out and fingerprint them. And see which ones belonged in your pocket and which ones didn't. And those that didn't, you should make them pay for ever having their hand in your pocket. I want to thank you for tuning in to Thor Radio Network. We'll see you next week. God bless.
Tell me what you say now. Tell me what you say, come again. If you cannot stay down, then you do not have to pretend like there is no way out. I should've never let you in, cause you got me face down.